Well, this morning I'm excited to be starting a new series. I'm not always that excited about new series, but I'm really excited about this one because it's something that's been important to me for a long time, and I think it's something that's important to Jesus as well. Over the next about 7 weeks, we're going to be talking about community, and we're going to be talking about how to be the community that Jesus wants us to be. What does that look like, and what are the important factors there? You know, in the Vineyard, we often say that we are a community of communities. We're part of a larger church family, a tribe, and then the Vineyard itself is a community amongst many communities of Christians worldwide. And I think that's really exciting. We believe that Jesus didn't just save us, but he brought us into his family. There's a verse in 1 Peter that talks about how he's made us a royal priesthood and a holy nation. And one of my favorite Francis Chan quotes is he talks about people who think they can follow Jesus and not be part of the church. And he says, what do you do with that verse? You say, I'm a priesthood? I'm a nation? That's kind of silly. And so we've been called to be part of a bigger thing, of a partnership. And I think in this time of social distancing, of quarantine, I think this is even more important than ever to focus on, because it takes a little extra work. So I'm especially excited that Marissa is starting off this series talking about healthy community. Here's a quick movie clip to get us started from the movie Ants.
All my life, I lived and worked in a big city, which, now that I think of it, is kind of a problem, since I always feel uncomfortable around crowds. I mean it. I have this fear of enclosed spaces. I everything makes me feel trapped all the time. You know, I always tell myself there's got to be something better out there, but maybe I think too much. I think everything must go back to the fact that I had a very anxious childhood. You know, my mother never had time for me. You know, when you're the middle child in a family of 5 million, you don't get any attention. I mean, how is it possible? And I've always had these abandonment issues which plague me. My father was basically a drone, like I've said, and, you know, the guy flew away when I was just a larva. And my job, don't get me started on, because it really annoys me. I was not cut out to be a worker. I'll tell you right now. I feel physically inadequate. My whole life, I've never been able to lift more than 10 times my own body weight. And when you get down to it, handling dirt is, you know, is not my idea of a rewarding career. It's this whole gung-ho superorganism thing that I, you know, I can't get. I try, but I don't get it. I mean, you know, what is it? I'm supposed to do everything for the colony, and what about my needs? What about me? I mean, I gotta believe there's some place out there that's better than this. Otherwise, I would just curl up in a larval position and weep. The whole system makes me feel insignificant.
So how many of you can relate to that? Like, some part of it. Maybe it's the family issues or childhood trauma. Maybe it's feelings of abandonment or a unfulfilling job. Maybe it's self-esteem issues, feeling purposeless. What about my needs, right? Have you ever asked that? What about my needs? There must be something more out there. The whole system makes me feel insignificant. I think at any given time, I'm probably processing through any three of these, if I'm honest. But I'm willing to bet that all of us have felt insignificant at some point in our life. Now, it doesn't have to take the form of a dramatic monologue like this. But how many of you have said or maybe just thought to yourself something like, I just feel like what I do doesn't make any difference. Or why bother? No one cares what I do. I just want to feel appreciated. I just want to be noticed. I think it's part of the human condition to long for a connection. And actually, Maslow explores this idea in what he calls his hierarchy of needs. So this graphic hopefully looks familiar, because Marshall introduced it when he was talking about compassionate ministry. So when we're talking about compassionate ministry, it's important to mean those bottom two needs, the physiological needs and the safety needs. And a lot of ministry and outreach is based on those first two levels of the pyramid. What we're going to talk about today is moving up the pyramid towards our psychological needs and then what he goes to call on our self-fulfillment needs. So in the hierarchy, right, we have our bottom two tier needs. That's things like water, food, shelter. You can't worry about anything else if you don't know where your next meal is coming from. Then we have safety needs, like our security, our health, our property. So if you're sick, it's hard to focus on like the next steps of the pyramid. You got to focus on that, take care of that. But then as you move up, we see love and belonging. So after we take care of those first two things, then we can focus on building friendships, building a sense of intimacy with others, family, a sense of connection. Once we do that, then we can move on to esteem, which is respect, self-esteem, status, recognition, strength, freedom. And then once all of that's been done, then we can move on to self-actualization, which is the desire to be the most that one can be. So I know you're thinking, if I wanted a psychology lecture, I would have just gone to a psychology lecture. What does this have to do with church? Well, I'm hoping that this looks a little familiar to something else we've talked about, because belong, be, and do actually line up with this idea. So you can see love and belonging is, of course, belong. Esteem is be. And self-actualization is do. So a couple of months ago, we talked about the idea belong, be, do. And so we learn to belong through the Father. He gives us a sense of belonging. We're his creation. Then we learn to be through our identity in the Son. He transforms our hearts, gives us a new identity. And then we learn to do through the Holy Spirit. Actually, when you look through the Bible, we're introduced to the Father first, then we're introduced to the Son, then we're introduced to the Holy Spirit when we're like really, truly get to know them. So I have more on this idea on my Everyone Gets to Play sermon message. So if you want more information, check that out. But it lines up with Maslow's idea, right? Before we can worry about identity and doing the stuff, we have to learn to belong first. So community is so much more than just a cute idea or good in theory. Community is essential to your own personal growth and maturity. And if we want to make a difference, leave our mark in the world, we must be deeply rooted in community. So we're starting our community series, and we can talk about the importance of community until we're blue in the face, but community has to be healthy, or else it will fall apart. We have to be a healthy community. And in order to maintain that community, it requires intentionality and hard work. So I'm sure we've all seen a community, whether it's a friend group or a church, fall apart. And it's not pretty. People are left hurt. People are left skeptical of the idea of community. It's not good for anyone. And community is hard. It really is. Community is hard. And that's because it's made up of relationships. And relationships are hard. I love this quote. It says, "The person who loves their dream of community will destroy community. But the person who loves those around them will create community." And this is by Dietrich Bonhoeffer in his book, Life Together, Classic Exploration of Christian Community. So in order to talk about healthy communities, we have to talk about healthy relationships. Now, if you know me, you know that I love people. I've cried completely sober, mind you, about how much I love another person. And this is something that I used to be embarrassed about, like I'd get teased about it. But I'm learning to kind of lean into that part of my personality, lean into that identity. But I can tell you that when you love deeply, you also leave yourself open to hurt deeply. Can you remember your first friendship breakup? I'm not talking about a romantic breakup, but the first time you and a friend had a falling out. I can still remember mine. And then I had another one a couple of years ago. And just the other day, I was going through some of my pictures because Google was telling me I had too many and I had to delete some. So I was going through, sorting through them. And I saw this picture that just like brought back a flood of memories. And I put together some pieces that I had never put together before and realized like a whole new hurt, a whole new betrayal. And it was amazing. This was years ago, but I still felt hurt. And I was actually surprised at how much so and like the feeling I had in the pit of my stomach. I've been betrayed. I've been hurt. I've felt abandoned by people. I've seen kind of the worst that relationships have to offer. And I can promise you that it is still worth it. Relationships are absolutely worth it. Let's check out Genesis 2:18. Then the Lord God said, "It is not good that the man should be alone. I will make him a helper fit for him." So it is not good that man should be alone. During creation, we see over and over again, it was good. God made this, and it was good. God made this, and it was good. God made this, and it was good. The first time we see it was not good is in reference to man being alone. So when I teach, I usually show like a bit of science and then go, "Ooh, look, it's also biblically sound," right? We just did that with Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? Here's where we see it in science. And then, oh, look, the Bible lines up with that too. But this time I showed you a verse first. It's not good for man to be alone. Does this have any scientific grounding? You bet it does. So Alan Enshore of the UCLA School of Medicine has done extensive research on this and comes to this idea. The idea is that we are born to form attachments, that our brains are physically wired to develop in tandem with another's through emotional communication, beginning before words are spoken. And then in The Gift of Touch, Helen Colton says that the hemoglobin in the blood increases significantly when we're touched. Now, hemoglobin is the part of our blood that carries vital supplies of oxygen to the heart and brain. And so what she concludes from this and like what she concludes in her book is that if we want to remain healthy, we must intentionally touch one another. So community is important. Finding a sense of belonging is important. We're not going to hound on that part for long. Like Marshall already talked about this a bit. I think we're all on the same page. Relationships are important. I think we can all agree that we're even created and called to be in relationships. But at this point, we might be feeling a little stuck. And guys, I understand. It can be scary to even like think about relationships if you've been hurt in the past. You might be feeling torn between two things. If I open myself up to others, I'm likely to be hurt because relationships are hard and messy. But then on the other side, if I don't open up in an attempt to protect myself, I'm missing out on some of the goodness God has for me. So how do I walk that line? How do I minimize my risk? And I wish I had some like three steps to completely get rid of your risk in relationships, but that's just not the case. There's no way to completely minimize it, but there are things that can help. And I could give tons of building blocks, kind of different things to utilize. We actually talked about one 2 weeks ago, the power of listening, right? But we could spend a lot of time here. There's some other points I want to hit. So we're just going to talk about one building block. But I think this is the one that's crucial to getting started. I think once we get this one in place, then everything else can start building. So that building block is honesty. And the idea I want to talk about today is that before we can be honest with others, we have to be honest with ourselves. Before we can even talk about the virtue of honesty with others, we need to take a good, long, honest look at ourselves. Because I can say I love people. I can say that I value relationships. But what does my life show? Are my actions in line with what I'm talking about? So if you don't mind, I'd like to just take a second. I'd like you to think about this. So answer these questions. What is the relational fruit in your life? What is the wake in your life? Do you leave people better off than when they first met you, or do you leave them hurting? And do you have meaningful relationships? Be honest with yourself. Do you have meaningful relationships? Now, I think we all know someone that whether it's like a coworker or a roommate or a friend, where it seems like their life is constantly falling apart. They're always being wronged. They're always a victim. Something's always happening to them. And it's just like a cycle that continues for years. And as outside observers, we can tell, we're like, you're the problem. You are the common denominator. Like, it's you. But can you be that honest with yourself? Like, can I sit back and say, what unhealthy habits am I stuck in? Am I the problem? I think Phil Stroud sums up this whole idea really well. He says, if we're going to engage the darkness out there, we need to first engage the darkness in here, in our personal lives. So if you looked at your relational fruit and it was maybe not so good, I'd encourage you to spend some time digging more into that more this week. Kind of spend some time praying, maybe read a couple books, but definitely press into that. If your relational fruit is good, sweet, we're going to continue blessing that. And if you're like, I don't know what my relational fruit looks like, what is a good relationship? I don't know how to judge that. Great, let's explore that a little bit. So what does good relationship look like? Where can we find an example of a good relationship? So in Genesis 1:27, we know that God created mankind in his own image. And the image of God, he created them, male and female, he created them. We've talked about this verse a lot. But we're created in the image of God. We're his imagers, right? So our relationships, if we're looking for a perfect example, we can look to God and image what he's doing. So who is God? Right? Well, we know that the God is like the idea of the Trinity, right? One God, three persons. And I love Vern introduced this idea in his sermon, Why Trinity, that the Trinity is a perfect example of relationship, right? So as Christians, we're many different people, but we all make up one body. And I love that the three parts of God all interact in a way that is very interdependent. And we're in a culture where we're told that independence is good. You want to be independent. You don't need anyone else. You can do things on your own. Even to ask for help is like a burden for other people. I don't want to be a burden. I want to be independent. And I think parts of this are good. There are some things that, you know, aren't terrible. like the uniqueness, right? Uniqueness is good. But it's not a competition. It's not one thing is better than another. And so this idea of interdependence, right? So it's not independent and it's not codependent. I think we often try to mix up interdependent and codependent. See, codependence is denial based. I'm going to deny myself things because I believe that it is for the good of the relationship, to the point where I will deny my individuality and personal needs. Codependence is fear based. I'm afraid to do anything on my own or anything different because I'm scared to introduce anything that might cause conflict to the relationship. Whereas interdependence is love-based. I will work on loving myself so that I can bring my best self to the relationship. I will honor my differences because it makes us stronger as a whole. Let's take this another step further. I think examples are helpful. And for me, the easiest way to tell if I'm being codependent or interdependent is how I treat apologies. So if someone apologizes to me, right? So if I'm in a codependent frame of mind, I will make myself responsible for your actions. So I'll rationalize your wrongdoing as not wrong. I don't expect an apology because I have trouble accepting you did something wrong. If I blame anyone, it's me. I'm the one that messed up. And if you apologize, I have trouble accepting it. I dismiss your wrongdoings as no big deal and ignore the way it affected me or that you treated me wrongly. Whereas if I'm in an interdependent frame of mind, I let you be responsible for your actions. I recognize that you've wronged me and expect you to clear your mess up. I recognize that I have value and I see your choices introducing distance that needs to be addressed. When you apologize, I don't hold what you did against you, but I also don't shy away from how it affected me. Like, I accept your apology, but yeah, that really did hurt. I'm honest with you and work with you to reestablish trust in our relationship. So I love that God is the perfect model of interdependence that we can use to strengthen and mature our own relationships. So we know that God is within the Trinity, he models relationships, models interdependence. What else do we know about God? Well, we know that he is love. And of course, when you talk about love, you got to talk about the love chapter. That's right. We're checking out 1 Corinthians 13. We're going to look at verses 4 through 8. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no records of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always preserves. I love the love chapter, right? I love love. But this isn't just for that special someone. I mean, of course, you can use it that way. It's great to use when talking about your spouse. But this is an example of God's love for us. And as his imagers, right, we're called to love others in this way. And by others, I mean your neighbors. Cool. And by love, I mean love your enemies this way, which is a lot less cool. But it's so important. It's a command. To not love someone is to not be in alignment with God. Because God loves everyone, and we want to be in alignment, right? But I know you're probably thinking, what about my needs? What if someone's hurting me? Or what if I need something? Am I supposed to put everything I do to the side so that I can love others? Well, if it's a temporary displeasure, sure, go ahead and love. Like, absolutely. Sometimes we're called to do things that are hard, that are challenging. So yeah, even when it's not super easy, still love. But there's absolutely something we need to clarify when talking about loving those who hurt you, loving your enemies. If your life, physical or mental well-being are in danger, your priority is to leave. Take care of yourself. And then you can work on loving from a distance. But we actually see Jesus example this several times. In Luke 28, or 4, chapter 4, we're starting at verse 28. When they heard these things, all in the synagogue were filled with wrath. And they rose up and drove him out of the town and brought him to the brow of the hill on which their town was built, so they could throw him down the cliff. But passing through their midst, he went away. So he didn't stick around and try to love them into not hurting him. No, he got out of there. Loving and leaving are not mutually exclusive. Like, Jesus is a perfect example of love, and he got out of there. Let's look at John 10, chapter 10, starting at verse 39. Again, his Jewish opponents picked up stones to stone him. But Jesus said to them, "I have shown you many good works from the Father. For which of these do you stone me?" So he engages them in conversation. We're going to kind of skip through this bit. He puts them back in their place, and we're going to jump back in at verse 39. And sorry, slides, I didn't give you that heads up. So verse 39 says, it's the very last slide. Again, they tried to seize him, but he escaped their grasp. So loving others does not mean passively taking whatever other people want to dish out on you. You can walk away. In fact, the only time Jesus takes the abuse is when it's a crucifixion, when he gives his life. And I'm not trying to discredit those that have given up their lives for Christ. That's something different. And I truly believe that there's a supernatural gifting that happens when someone dies to spread the gospel or declare the name of Jesus. But losing your life to spread the gospel of love is not the same as losing your life to a spouse you thought you could love the abuse out of. Staying with someone that hurts you is not the only way to love. And I'm making a big deal out of this because I know people that have been taught the opposite and never recover. I know people that have been taught, you know, submit and if you love him, then he won't hurt you. And that's just not the case. If you're in, like I said, if you're in physical or mental danger, your priority is to leave. I do think we're called to love, but that's later. That's we can work on that later. Remember, take care of the first two parts of the pyramid before you can work on moving up. And this is a part of relationships that we really don't want to talk about. It kind of like leaves a pit in your stomach, right? When you're talking about this, it's ugly. It's too real. It's messy. It's challenging. But the good thing is that we were never created to do this on our own. There is no way that we can love our enemies without God's love in us. And if you aren't there yet, if you can't love someone that has really truly hurt you, it's okay. God's not going to love you any less. His love, his forgiveness does not depend on our perfect obedience. Thank goodness, right? Loving someone that has been a source of trauma for you does not happen on your own. But God is offering to lead you through it if you're ready. And that doesn't mean you let him back into your life. That doesn't mean you trust. That's something else, right? But there is an invitation. Now, we've said a lot on love. Maybe not the love sermon you're used to hearing. But I think we discovered that our ability to love others, and thus our ability to have a healthy relationship, requires a balancing act between two things. Caring for others' needs, and letting God care for our needs. And when we talk about love, it seems almost blasphemous to talk about our own needs. But it's the only way we can do this for the long haul. I can be nice to anyone for 5 minutes. This is a skill I had drilled into me as a barista. I might have someone like talking away about their political beliefs, and even if they're like polar opposite from mine, you just smile and nod. Oh, yeah, that's interesting. They were there for coffee and friendly customer service, not to hear my political opinions. And actually, you could tell the level of friendship I had with a regular by how much I disagreed with them. I can get along with anyone. But if you've heard what I really think, then cheers, we're buds. But to me, that's the goal, real relationship, right? I want to have healthy relationships for the long haul, not just put up with people for a couple minutes at a time. But in order to do that, I have to be secure in myself. If we are after fruitful longevity, then you have to have a healthy, cared for inner life. And I think it's like good Christians, and I'm using quotes, good Christians. I think our priority list, if, you know, we made a list of all of our priorities in life, would be God at the top, then like my spouse, church, family, friends, everything else I can possibly think of. And then maybe, if it even makes a list, my own emotional and spiritual health. But our priorities can't live in a rigid list like that. There has to be movement. There has to be a give and a take. Other than God being at the top, everything else has some wiggle room. There may be a season where my family is absolutely more important than anything here at the church, and that's okay. There may be a season where my own health takes precedence over the majority of the list. That's okay. I think a key part of being healthy is having that flux. I don't want to stay stuck or stagnant. There needs to be that cycle. Hopefully at this point, when I talk about cycles, we think about the long be do, right? Has to be in that order. You have to learn to belong before we can be, before we can do. And you have to take the time to care for yourself in the belong and be stage before you can go out and do this stuff. Marshall, Priscilla, Chicory, and I were in the Philippines a couple years ago for a missions trip. And every night we go to a different barangay, which is like a village. And each night we would do music and we'd teach the gospel. And every night we would end the service with an opportunity for people to get prayer, And we would have people line up. So they'd like spread us out and then we'd have lines of people like desperate for prayer. So we prayed for a ton of physical healing. We prayed for like protection over family members. We prayed for spiritual healings. But you would just like pray for someone, they'd pass, and then someone else would come up. And it was this whole long line of people. And as soon as we would finish, the group that we were working with, the organization we were there with, they would whisk you away. They'd like practically drag you through the car, pushing through the crowd. And the first couple of nights, I didn't want to leave. I wanted to stay up and take pictures with people. I wanted to chat, hang out with everyone. But the organization we were with, they were so adamant. They're like, no, you need to get back to the hotel and you need to rest. And boy, were they right. Each evening that went by, I was more and more just like ready to get to that car and collapse exhausted. In order to keep praying for others, in order to do the stuff, we had to take care of ourselves and make sure that we stayed rested. And I can tell you that praying for others and ministry is exhausting. It does take a little bit out of you. And guess what? Jesus did this too. So let's check out Luke. We're starting in chapter 4, verse 38. Jesus left the synagogue and went to the home of Simon. Now, Simon's mother-in-law was suffering from a high fever, and they asked Jesus to help her. So he bent over her and rebuked the fever, and it left her. She got up at once and began to wait on them. At sunset, the people brought to Jesus all who had various kinds of sickness, and laying his hands on each one, he healed them. That's a lot of healing. Holy smokes. Moreover, demons came out of many people, shouting, "You are the Son of God." But he rebuked them and would not allow them to speak because they knew that he was the Messiah. At daybreak, Jesus went out to a solitary place. So he engages in really intense ministry. He's healing crowds. He's expelling demons, right? And then he goes to rest. He breathed out and then he retreats to breathe back in. There's a give and a take. Let's look at Luke 5, verse 12. Just in case you think I cherry-picked one, we're just going to travel right on through Luke and see. So starting at verse 12, while Jesus was in one of the towns, a man came along who was covered with leprosy. When he saw Jesus, he fell with his face to the ground and begged him, "Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean." Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. "I am willing," he said, "be clean." And immediately the leprosy left him. Then Jesus ordered him, "Don't tell anyone, but go, show yourself to the priest, and offer the sacrifices that Moses commanded for your cleansing as a testimony to them." Yet the news about him spread all the more so that crowds of people came to hear and be healed of their sicknesses. But Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and prayed. He healed and he exhaled. Then he withdrew to inhale. And I would like to make two quick clarifications on self-care. First, note that it specifies Jesus went away to pray. He didn't go away to watch Netflix or scroll through social media. He's spending intentional time with God. And I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with doing either of those things, but we can't pretend that that's self-care. We got to be honest with ourselves, right? That building block. So if we're talking about actual self-care, it's intentional time with God. And the second thing is that when I make time for self-care, I'll sometimes catch myself thinking, like, I have to take care of myself because no one else will. And that's a dangerous rabbit hole to go down. Self-care is not me fixing all my problems. It's not me pulling my bootstraps up. Self-care is spending time in the spirit and letting him refill me. It's that IV to heaven. So let's keep reading. We're going to look at Luke 6, verse 12. One of those days, Jesus went out to a mountainside to pray and spent the night praying to God. When morning came, he called his disciples to him and chose 12 of them, whom he also designated apostles. So Jesus takes a huge breath in, spending all night praying before exhaling and choosing the 12 apostles. Right? We breathe in, we breathe out. We engage in self-care, we care for others. There has to be a balance, a rhythm, a cycle. Healthy communities starts with healthy relationships, which starts with healthy you. I'm going to say that again. Healthy community starts with healthy relationships, which starts with healthy you. So we talked about a lot of stuff. Let's take a minute to kind of recap some of these ideas we went over. So we have to find a place to belong, right? Find a community before we can really solidify our identity and lean into our destiny. And in order for community to work, we have to have functional and healthy relationships. This is scary because people aren't perfect. Hurt people hurt people. And we can't change others. We can't magically fix their hurt, but we can make sure we aren't adding to the problem. We can make sure we aren't hurting others. And this means taking an honest look at our relational fruit. Thankfully, we worship an amazing God that is the perfect example of relationship. He models to us interdependence and love. And that's a love that's challenging, that goes against everything we know. But we're not left on our own. He supplies that love for us. He provides us with healthy ways to recharge, and he meets all of our needs. And lastly, not only is it okay to take time to breathe in, it's crucial. It's following the example Jesus set for us.